Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. We own Stage Left at the Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in Brunswick, New Jersey. We're going to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Hey there, Mark.
Morning, Francis.
How are you today?
Chipper.
We want to talk about gadgets.
There are a lot of wine gadgets out there. Every magazine, everything that's connected to the Wine Spectator, the Wine Enthusiast will send you a little catalog, IWA. There's all these little catalogs, and they all want to sell gadgets.
Okay, here are some gadgets we don't recommend. First of all, the idea, if you don't have a place in your house where there's a consistent temperature, preferably below 60 degrees, and you have some wine you want to invest in, you want to buy a wine cooler for home.
I want to just travel backwards for a second. We do use those catalogs, and we do buy some things from both of those companies.
Wine Enthusiast is a good company. Mm-hmm. I like them a lot. But there's stuff that makes sense, and there's stuff that doesn't make sense.
Exactly.
And no reason to... If you have a place in your cellar where it's dark, it's vibration-free, keep it away from the washing machine, mm-hmm. and the temperature is a constant temperature, and anywhere between 55 and 65, I think, is fine, you're probably okay. But if you don't have that, and I don't... You want to buy a wine cooler.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mark has...
next to the hot water heater, isn't it?
Mark,
that's not your answer.
Mark has a wine cooler.
Mm-hmm.
I have, because I use, in Jersey City, I have a basement, but the basement fluctuates in temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to buy a special unit, because most of these units are meant to be kept in your house and only have cooling.
Right.
Mine is in the basement, and it's not low enough.
Basement could get hot, basement could get cold.
So I have a unit that both heats and cools. There are very few units that do both of those things. If you need heating and cooling, as I do in Jersey City, you need to be sure you have a unit that does both of those things, mm-hmm. and my wine is kept at a perfect 55 degrees.
There's also something that's really become popular lately, and I just want to warn people against it. It's the two different temperature zones inside the unit. There'll be a cold zone and then a regular red zone, and what they call it sometimes is a white zone and a red zone. What you want to be careful about that is, generally we keep these items in these units because we're looking to age them, we're looking to have them for some time. Once you put something in that cold zone, you potentially can do damage to your wine.
Or you'll slow down the aging. The idea is, you chill a bottle of champagne when it comes time to drink it.
Right.
And frankly, if it's in your cellar at 55 degrees or 60 degrees, when you want to chill it, it's only going to take a couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You don't store champagne. You don't age champagne at 37 degrees Fahrenheit.
Right. We're a restaurant, and what you'll see is we have what we call our white room, and those are the wines that are actively in use. But then you'll see on the shelves of our restaurant inside our wine cellar and both our wine library, and we have three different wine rooms in addition to the cold room that we use, you'll see white wines on the shelves there.
They're just aging.
Those white wines are we intend on having for a while, and we're aging them. The wines that are in the cooler are wines that are meant to be sold relatively quickly.
So when you're buying a wine cellar at home, and we've gotten a lot of emails asking us to give advice about that, and look, we listen to your emails, and we do show... Some of the things that I think are sort of, there are two things about these. One, if it's going to be in your living room, buy the nice door and the pen that can make a nice piece of furniture. My stuff in my basement in Jersey City, okay, where I have to go out of my apartment, go down three floors, open up the gunmetal door and then go into in the cage in my basement. Yeah, they're just black boxes. Okay, they're black boxes, but they do have a lock on them because I am in Jersey City. Now, some of the accoutrements or the accessories that they'll try and sell you are... One of them that really makes no sense at all is there's an internal wine sensor thermometer. Mm-hmm. And the way it works is that you want to know, they bill it as you want to know exactly the temperature of the wine itself.
Of the liquid.
Knowing the air, what the temperature of the air is inside the box isn't good enough. So it's this little probe. And you basically take a wine bottle, fill it with water, put the probe in your cell, in the cabinet. And that way, you'll have a reading. The wire comes to the outside and lets you know exactly what the temperature of the liquid is. Why do you care?
Right. Okay. You want to change the air temperature before the liquid temperature changes anyway.
Right, exactly. So there's no reason to know that. Mm-hmm. If the temperature of the air is 55 degrees and hasn't changed, the temperature of the wine is going to be 55 degrees.
So that's one of the gadgets we advise against. One of the gadgets we advise for, a lot of these units will come with a low vibration option. If you have an opportunity to get one with a low vibration option, that's a really good idea. Vibration is the enemy of wine.
Part of the process of aging wine is wine as it ages. Wine aging is basically a controlled process of decay, right? And so as wine ages, in its process of decay, as all things tend toward entropy, there are little back eddies of complex molecules that form. And those, the aging of wine is, in a good way, the élevage of wine is when we get some simple molecules that, as the wine ages, they link up and make longer chains. And these long, large molecules account for a lot of the complexity of aging mm-hmm. wine. If you're vibrating wine, these molecules won't form.
You hinder those chains from linking up and becoming those long, complex molecules.
Next topic of gadgetry, we had a gentleman come in.
Very, very nice gentleman.
Very nice gentleman. Came in, and he has one of these things. I've seen them. They're called Clé de Vin, wine keys, right?
They're like $100 in the magazines.
And the Clé de Vin, I like saying that, Clé de Vin. But the wine key, it's a little piece of copper and some other metal alloy, and the idea is that you take this little piece of copper
and you put it in the wine, and it will reduce the tannins. The tannins are the things.
No, well, that's not how they bill it.
Well, it'll age your wine, but
right. Let's deal with
it. Go ahead.
You put the Clé de Vin in your glass of wine, which looks really silly at a bar.
And the marketing is every second it's in the wine will age your wine 1 year.
The most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Okay? Because one of the things that happens as wine ages is tannins get softer. That's mm-hmm. one of the things. That's the least important thing that
happens. One of the things that's interesting and that people look for in an older wine.
But
you look for softer, more complex tannins. One of the things that we're talking about is, you know, those tannin molecules linking up.
But you look for softer and more complex.
That was the key phrase that I just used.
And go ahead, you want to tell a story?
So we experimented with it. He put in, and we took the same glass of wine, and we put the Clé de Vin in the wine, in the vin, and we did it for 15 seconds, because we really wanted to do a real experiment.
So according to the marketing, that should have aged this glass of Cabernet 15 years.
15 years.
Your impression?
My impression, well, let me be straight, okay? First thing.
Your wife will be pleased.
Did the wine change in the glass?
Yes.
Absolutely, that the metal alloy in this Clé de Vin changed the wine in the glass. Next, probably more important question, did it make it better?
No. No. Now you funny too. No. here's the deal. Yes, it softened the tannins, but that's not the point.
Right.
Aging wine, we haven't figured out how to do it yet, and there is no magic buzzer that you can stick in your wine. And you know what? I'm not
even going to say that this particular device wouldn't make some wines better, because it might make some wines better that are over the top with
but these
with
people are charlatans.
Tannins.
These people are charlatans, and they're taking advantage of people who haven't had a lot of experience, and most Americans haven't had a lot of experience mm-hmm. with aged wines, and it's really hard, and you got to be patient. If you want to age some wines at home, I have a suggestion on how to do it. Buy them and then don't drink them for a long time.
Or spend a lot of money and buy some old ones. But, seriously, with these items, just, you know, be careful with them. Just because something changes doesn't mean that it's changed for the better.
And if you want to age some wines, and I recommend it, you can email us at francis@restaurantguysradio.com or mark@restaurantguysradio.com, and I'll make some suggestions as wine that, mm-hmm. to wines that age well, because not all wines age well, and most don't. But there are some inexpensive ones, like German whites. You'd be surprised. Mm-hmm. $10-$15, and they can age for like 20 years. Stick them in your cellar and go back every year or two and try one, and you'll be amazed. In just a moment, you're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Fidel Baccio. He opened his own company in 1987. Bon Appetit Management Company now has 400 cafes over 28 states, and they are committed to sourcing local, sustainably produced foods to use in all their kitchens wherever they are.
Fidel, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with both of you.
That is quite an impressive number, 400 cafes in 28 states, which is itself a venture that's national in scope, but each of them committed to sourcing local ingredients wherever possible. That's a tremendous achievement.
Yeah, we're very, very proud of it. We're celebrating our 20th year this year. I think one of the reasons we're able to do that is because we customize every location. We're not a chain, if you will, that says, okay, here's the menu and here's the big recipe boxes and you must follow it. Each chef can source and look at his own environment and create something unique for that particular customer base.
Well, as a guy who owns and runs two places, okay, and you know, is constantly monitoring quality control and is constantly trying to get an influx of new things and special important ingredients. How are you accomplishing that over such a wide variety of different kinds of places in different states and different places that are different stylistically?
It's not easy, but I think if you hire the right people and you got the right culture, it's really the chefs that do that. And I think they really care about the local communities and what's out there, the local artisans, where they can buy the best produce, cheese, bread, etc. Then they go out and they find it, because that's part of the culture of this company, that they must do that within hopefully within 150-mile radius. We can't get everything from 150-mile radius, but we can get 80% of it. And so we've made that part of that responsibility of those chefs, and they have fun with it. They really do.
We have a lot of folks in the industry who listen to this show, and the folks who aren't in the industry are interested in the industry. I think one of the most exciting things about your company, and one of the things that I think must be the most challenging that you're very successful at, is providing a structure for 400 different restaurants to operate. I mean, it strikes me that it will be easier to come up with a formula and you have 400 Wendy's or 400 McDonald's.
Right, just be an Olive Garden and you're an Olive Garden is an Olive Garden is an Olive Garden.
How? What do they all have in common? What do you provide these guys with as the corporate structure? What do you give them, and then what do you let them do on their own? What must they do?
They must be able to serve fresh, natural, local food that is really real and that it's authentic. I mean, that's kind of the mantra. And what we've asked them to do, we give them certain guidelines. For example, you must buy cage-free eggs. You must buy non-therapeutic, antibiotic-free poultry. No antibiotics or human growth promotions in any of that. You must buy sustainable seafood that's in accordance with the Seafood Watch program we have put together.
Do you get pushback on any of those things from
no,
your chefs?
No, none of them. Our chefs come to us because they want to. If you're a chef in a restaurant, you've got a menu, and you can do some specials once in a while. But you're stuck with that menu at least for the season or for that particular season. What we try to do is say, here's a clean piece of paper. Go have fun. Go talk to your local community and the local sourcing and do what's right for that customer base, which is everyone unique. So if I do Yahoo's headquarters, for example, it would be different than Google or Oracle because they're different people.
Mm-hmm. One of the things we try and say to our customer base, and certainly to the other restaurant owners and people, chefs who run their own restaurants and run other people's restaurants, by sourcing these types of products, we're not just sourcing things because they're quote-unquote good for you. We're also sourcing these products because we believe that these are the best products available. These are not just the products that are best for you. These are the products that taste best.
I agree with you. And I think one of the reasons why we took the platform of sustainability or social responsible practice as a company was it all started with flavor. Mm-hmm. and it started with taste. And we realized early on that if we were going to make a difference in this particular segment of the industry, if we were going to be restaurateurs in this so-called contract food service market, we needed to do something with product. Because if you remember 20 years ago, product was horrible. I mean, mm-hmm. Blue Lake green beans in water on a steam table line for 4 hours. Mm. That's what they served people. And there was no chefs in that part of the business. So what we said was, if we're going to do things that are alive with flavor, we better create a culture that allows them to go do that first of all. And sourcing the best products locally drove us to that answer.
Now, how do you come up with 400 individual chefs that
share your philosophy?
Yeah.
You know, guys, it was not easy at the beginning because we were going against. I made a huge difference in what we were trying to do, and we were going against the grain 20 years ago, and no one even thought about this kind of thing. I mean, Alice Waters did at Chez Panisse, and thank God I'm in the Bay Area, so you know, I was kind of in tune to some of that stuff. But it started to take off. One thing led to another, and we attracted some really terrific chefs that really cared. And they were burnt out in the restaurant and the hotel business.
I want to take a short. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back talking more with Fidel Baccio about his company, Bon Appetit, and sourcing sustainably in an institutional setting. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The matagat and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're talking with Fidel Baccio about his company, Bon Appetit Management, which runs over 400 cafes that practice responsible sourcing of ingredients and that 400 that buy locally in 28 different states across the country. You have 400 different chefs that are individually empowered to go out and make these choices to source locally. How do you govern quality? What are the standards?
You ever get a renegade who just says, no, I'm not doing it that way, and
well,
off they go?
Well, but how do you
govern? Sure we do. Yeah. So they don't last very long.
You have a similar style of management to ours. But how do you judgments of quality? Are there people that travel all the different cafes and sample the food and taste it?
Well, we do have a structure, an organizational structure that, you know, we have district managers and supervisors and so forth. But if we have to rely on kind of an audit system like that, something's wrong. I'm telling you, I'm blessed with fabulous people that really care about what we're trying to do. And they care about it because I think we've read so much about the fact that food is not safe and we got E. coli and spinach problems. And think about what's happened in the last year. And I think it's their profession now, so they want to do food that's real. They want to do food that's authentic, and it's their customers are the ones that audit them more than we do. The customers are saying we love it or we don't love it, and we can track revenues just like you guys can.
You find out pretty quickly. Tell us some of the corporations and places that you're in.
So we do a lot in Silicon Valley here, the Googles of the world, and Oracle, and Yahoo, and Cisco, and eBay, and you know, PayPal, those kinds of companies. We do some oil companies in Texas. We have a nice base of business in the Midwest, companies like Best Buy and Carlson Companies and Target's headquarters. Wherever there's a large concentration of employees that really care about breaking bread together and creating a culture.
So these places that, and we need to go to a break in just a moment, but these places that would formerly have been called cafeterias that we're now calling cafes and actual places where you can get food.
Yes, and these are not cafeterias, believe me. Some of these places would rival any restaurant. They're fabulous.
When we come back after the news, we're going to talk more with Fidel Baccio about how the kind of food that we have been championing for years is finding its way into not just private service restaurants, but into the corporate cafeterias as well, and we think it's great. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Today we're talking with Fidel Baucho. His company is Bon Appetit Management. They have over 400 cafes operating in 28 states. And all of those cafes are sourcing their product from responsible sources and as local as possible. Fidel, in addition to running corporate cafes, you run standalone restaurants. But let's talk about what would have formerly been called the corporate cafeteria, which you call a cafe, and you run along the lines of a restaurant. You mentioned community before. Is that something that the companies are seeking, or is that something that you've introduced to a lot of these companies, that cafe, a meal, should be a place where people come together and forge a sense of community?
I think we were the first ones to introduce that. I was concerned, and I heard words like productivity, and especially on large campuses that we have, especially on the West Coast, where you have the Intels and you have many buildings and 8,000 to 10,000 employees, and they were concerned about them leaving, you know, their workspace and so forth. It started with Oracle. We were the first ones at Oracle when that was a dream in Larry Ellison's eyes. And we said, why don't we build something unique here? And so we have four or five different kinds of facilities around a lake that any of the employees can go to. They can go to a Mediterranean marketplace. They can go to an Indian curry house. They can go to a Japanese noodle bar. And so forth and so forth. You can still get a great meatloaf and, you know, grilled cheese sandwich if they want. But all of this food is authentic. It's different. It takes all of the cultural backgrounds that they have. And so that kind of started the whole thing. And when Oracle created that, when I helped them create that, then everybody else started to follow.
Well, I think one of the great feathers in your cap at this point is your partnership with a place called Monterey Bay Aquarium.
Seafood Watch, yes.
A group that's been on the show, and we talked about the Seafood Watch, that they've kind of put together a list for consumers as well as for restaurateurs. A little pamphlet that's very easy to use that differs depending on where you are in the country, about seafood that is sustainable and the things you should be eating and the things that maybe you should be watching out for. And the fact that that particular organization is using your organization, I think, is a huge makes a huge statement for the types of things you're doing.
Right. We do a restaurant there that's open to the public in the Monterey Bay Aquarium, and we also do their cafe and do all the catering in that whole facility and partnered with them on the Seafood Watch to make sure that we were using the best alternative that we could find in terms of, you know, healthy oceans and to make sure that there's a fish supply for the future generations to come. So an example of that for if you're in your grocery store would be you want to avoid Atlantic cod. Let's say you were making fish and chips. And one good solution to that would be pollock.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, pollock is actually cheaper than the cod. And it tastes just as wonderful. It's a wonderful white fish. So it's those kinds of choices that our chefs must make and follow those guidelines. And hopefully consumers will make, too, when they go to grocery stores and buy their products at home, to be able to make sure that we're taking care of the oceans and we're taking care of future generations so there's a supply of flavorful and healthy food.
Well, I'd like my kids to be able to eat cod, too, you know?
Yeah,
right. That'd be all right.
When you, I think that what's interesting to me about the implications of this at work are, you know, we operate a couple of fine dining restaurants, and people who listen to our show or are very interested in food hear more and more about this. People who shop at Whole Foods are looking to eat responsibly and are sort of making the connection between very often the most responsibly sourced product and the best tasting product are one and the same. I think what's interesting about you being in the workplace, in corporate cafes, is there are folks who might never venture into where this what we do, what we're talking about here, is a salient topic. Yet do you find that you're sort of spreading the gospel a little bit to them in the corporate cafes, and maybe they take those lessons home with them?
I'm hoping that that's true, and I think we do to some extent. I think it depends on the part of the country. The West Coast is pretty in tune to this. The Midwest is getting there, but they're not quite there yet. I think the East Coast is somewhat in tune also. So as you know, trends start from one side of the country to the other and work toward the middle. You know, we got to be careful in the Midwest. If I'm in Minneapolis, you know, we're not going to be able to get the kind of fresh fish that we can get on the West Coast or you can get on the East Coast. So we got to stay to things that we can get out of the lakes and the streams and so forth. And we try to do that as much as possible.
Now, I want to ask, now, when we talk about sourcing locally whenever possible, we do mean whenever possible. There are certain things that it is responsible to source, and you must source from other places. Like, no one's growing sugar cane in Minneapolis, right?
For a moment, and I'd like you to comment on an op-ed piece that was in the New York Times just recently, written by the co-leader of Slow Food New York City. And it's not all food can be local. And I'll just do a little excerpt here. You know, if we're truly interested in sustainable food system, we must consider that the producer's point of view as well as the consumer's. From the producer's perspective, coffee, chocolate, vanilla, olive oil, and wine are products that could not survive if they had to depend on local only consumption. Locavores should understand that there's a difference between indulging in tasteless midwinter raspberries and supporting the efforts of indigenous farmers whose living depends on offering their unique products to a global market. Can you comment on that for us? Because, I mean, I know you're very big into the local food movement.
There's two sides to that. Maybe we shouldn't be eating raspberries in the wintertime.
Right. Maybe. Well, I think that's what that letter says. I don't want to eat raspberries in the wintertime, but I do want to eat olive oil.
I understand that. You're right. There's some things that we cannot avoid. But on the other hand, things are changing. We're coming out with what we call the low-carbon diet that we're starting to work very hard to put into our company, which really has, you know, we're trying to be the first restaurant company to make a connection between food and climate change now that this is a big issue. And one-third of the global greenhouse gas emissions is a result of agricultural issues. So, you know, we're trying to say, okay, maybe we should not, for example, be buying bananas and shipping them on a boat and bring them over here 3,000 miles in high-speed refrigerated ships. Maybe a local apple would be better, and maybe we shouldn't eat as many bananas and so forth. So there's a whole bunch of different ways to look at this thing. It's complicated, Mark. It's not easy. You're right. Chocolate is an issue. That's a fair trade issue. So is coffee. Pineapples are another issue. All of these issues, you know, people are still going to want to eat that, but maybe we can reduce some of the consumption. Maybe we don't have to eat as much. Beef, the University of Chicago just came out with a research that said that livestock production, primarily beef, is responsible for 18% of greenhouse gas emissions. Well, maybe we can reduce the size and the portions of the beef we eat.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not saying eliminate it. Well, all we're doing is saying we ought to give people choices to make their own decisions.
Well, and I think that for most of the people who are following this locavore movement, as Francis and I are, you know, there has to be some common sense to it. You know,
I agree.
Yes, we want to eat most of our foods within 150 miles that are produced within 150 miles. But in the dead of winter, that becomes more difficult if you live in places that are frozen during that period of time.
Right.
And I think that there's a sensible approach to it. And it seems like certainly that your organization has taken kind of a sensible approach to it. Though, when we come back from our next segment, I would really like to talk about a program you have going on, your Eat Local Challenge, because I think it's really interesting, and I think that people need to challenge themselves more.
We'll be back in just a moment talking more with Fidel Baccio about his company, Bon Appetit Management. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room, and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on Nine, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guest today is Fidel Baccio. We're talking with him about his company, Bon Appetit Management, which runs over 400 operations, 400 cafes, that source their product locally and responsibly.
You know, Fidel, we were talking before the break about, you know, eating locally and people challenging themselves, and we got cut off there a little bit. You know, you guys are doing a really, really interesting program that I think really has heightened some awareness. Can you talk to us a little bit about your organization's Eat Local Challenge?
Yes, we started that a couple of years ago where we took one particular day. This past year was October 3rd, 2006. And we said to every chef in the 400 cafes, you must have one entree, total complete entree that you're doing from 150 miles, and that includes everything from, with the exception of salt, I think we said. So they had to find everything for that particular meal.
And you actually even had one chef go down to the ocean and collect his own salt.
And I was just going to say, one chef went in and got his own salt in the ocean, which was fabulous. I thought it was great. And the chefs had a great time with this, and we did a lot of advertising in the locations and so forth, and the customers just loved it. They thought it was fabulous. And then we showcased all of the different food artisans that we used for that particular meal in that location. So the cheesemakers and the farmers and the ranchers and the dairymen and the people that made the butter, and everybody came. It was just fabulous. And so we've done this we're going to start doing this every year, because I think it's not only a fun thing to do, but it's made our customers very aware of not only the flavor that we can get, that you can buy from your local farmer or within your particular area, but what we're doing for the community, which I think is we're having a profound impact on the community. Last year, we bought over $55 million worth of local artisan food in the United States.
That's great.
In our company, so I'm really proud of that.
You should be. It's a big statement.
Now, this leads me to my next point. I'll say this cheekily, but Fidel, you're not poor. You haven't gone broke with this concept. A Bon Appetit Management Company has done quite well, and I think that sometimes when big corporate agribusiness sort of attacks what we do, and they often attack what we do, they say, oh, well, can't make money doing that. It's crunchy granola. It's a pie-in-the-sky idea. Yet, it is profitable, isn't it?
You can be green and profitable at the same time, and I'll tell you why, because now this is what customers want. We're hearing this from our customers. They're saying, give me food that's real, make sure that it's authentic, but make sure it's not only natural and local, but it's safe. Mm-hmm. And our customers are concerned about that, and when you wrap that all around to say, we're not only taking care of that need for you and those wishes, but we're doing something for the community in which you live and for the environment so that future generations have an adequate food supply and that it's safe. Boy, that's a win-win for everybody.
I mean, even if you're looking at this from a selfish perspective, you're getting better food. The other thing here that I think that maybe over the last 20 years or so, a lot of people have lost. Here in the Northeast, we have spectacular seasons, okay, where different products come and go during the seasons. We're beginning to celebrate the seasons again in the Northeast.
Yeah.
And you know what? If you have raspberries all year long, well, first of all, they're not as good during the other 8, 9, 10 months of the year when you can get them. And when they come back, it's a celebration. When
yes.
you get tomatoes that are fresh off the vine, it's a celebration. When watermelon comes into the season, it's a celebration. And frankly, even when winter comes and you move to things like root vegetables and mushrooms and those kinds of things can be celebrated as well. When the spring morels come up, that's a celebration. Spring
yes.
garlic. Celebrate all these things. Enjoy these things.
I agree with that. And we ought to do more and more of that.
It's a shame that some of these things, I think, have fallen by the wayside, but I think it's great, Fidel, that your organization is changing that on a global scale. Because, frankly, you know, my two restaurants, they're small. They don't, not that many people can eat in my two restaurants. And when you're talking about changing the way people eat in these larger cafes and across the country in, you know, in 400 units, you can make a big difference, and hopefully you are.
Let's turn the topic for a moment to something different than local, and it's related to sustainability. Your group has signed on to the Genetic Engineering Policy Alliance. Can you tell us about that?
We signed on to the genetic. At this point, I know there's a lot of pro and con with this, but we don't believe that any genetically modified products, we should be buying any genetically modified product. We think it's wrong. And we've made that statement right now, and I know it's been, we've had a lot of criticism about that.
Not from us.
But deep down in our hearts, we really believe that that's what we should be doing.
Well, Francis and I, our position on that is there's no turning back from using genetically modified products, because once they get into the air,
it's over with.
It's over. And if we've made a mistake, we can never turn back from it.
There's enough issues going on with public health, human health, and animal welfare concerns, and the environment, and air, and spills and leaks in manure ponds, and the contamination of rivers, and all of this issue that we need to work on, especially if we're going to be feeding America. And those are big, big issues. Those are big agriculture issues. The last thing we need is all this genetically modified stuff. Let's just work on the real problems that we have to work on.
Fidel Baccio, we couldn't agree with you more, and I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us on The Restaurant Guys.
Great. I enjoyed it very much. Good luck to you guys. If you're ever on the West Coast, come look me up.
We certainly will, and we'll put the link, Bon Appetit, if you need them to come in and run your corporate cafe. You can check them out by linking through our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1155.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. You know, we were just talking with Fidel Baccio, and he runs a Bon Appetit management company, no relation to Bon Appetit the magazine, but they run a lot of what would have in former times been kind of industrial cafeterias for places like Yahoo and large corporations like that, but they're also in universities. You know, the Oberlin University and some other really kind of prestigious universities where people are taking notice of what they're eating. The world is changing, and it's changing fast. And I love that there is actually, and, you know, I guess you can't really call this a large corporation because it's not, you know, it's certainly not a Fortune 500 company, but this is certainly a middle to large company that's doing things and trying to change the way America is eating in those kind of, like I said, those what would have been cafeteria settings, and change the whole dynamic. It's very important.
You know, he said his company bought $50 million of locally sourced produce last year. Now, remember, there's all sorts of efforts out there from the large producers of food that are not local, that seek to have food be the same throughout the world, processed food. There's a lot of pushback from them. There's a lot of them saying, oh, this is bunk. And if you wonder why... what is it? The Center for Consumer Freedom is the website. That's a shill website. It's really an industry front group, and they'll talk about how these people are trying to make us eat locally and take away our choices for Pop-Tarts. That's not it. And the reason that
we want you to have your Pop-Tarts. It's okay to have a Pop-Tart.
No, I don't want you to have your Pop-Tart. I'd rather you choose not to have your Pop-Tart.
Right.
But I want to give you other choices. And the reason these companies push back is because that's $50 million that if those corporate cafeterias were still corporate cafeterias and not buying locally, would have gone into the pockets of corporate agribusiness. You know, $50 million here, $50 million there. Sooner or later, you're talking about some
real
money.
You got a billion.
Exactly.
20 of those, you got a billion.
So Godspeed to Fidel Baccio and his work, and it can be profitable, and it's the right way to do things. Hope you've enjoyed the hour with The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.